The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goetz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this March 4th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz, and you got me for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. Tons to get to on the show today. As crazy as it may sound, it is Auburn basketball game day, just a couple of days removed from winning the SEC regular season championship in a game where some would say, it doesn't matter. It's already locked up. You've already got a one seed. You've already won the conference. Does it really matter to go on the road to a top 25 team in the SEC? We'll have that conversation today, plus some other games going on around the conference, around college basketball. Had a couple of them last night as well that we need to break down for just a little bit. And with it being Tuesday, we have our weekly series with Auburn baseball. We had a chance to sit down with Samuel Dutton earlier today, who was the starting man on the mound for Auburn baseball in the opener against Ohio State in Arlington in that three-game set with Ohio State, Oregon State, and Baylor. So we'll talk to him and have a conversation with him coming up at 2:30. So lots to get to, plus updated bracketology and a deep dive into Auburn and Texas A&M. And joining me in the studio, as he does every single day, my man, Christian Griffin. How are you on this Tuesday afternoon, sir?
Doing very, very well. As you mentioned, a little bit weird that it doesn't necessarily feel like Auburn game day. You feel like you're still coming off the emotional high of the win in Lexington for the first time in what feels like 100 years, but you're hoping that that's not the mindset of the Auburn Tigers, right? I mean, as you were mentioning, you feel like some say it's locked up. The game doesn't necessarily matter. That being said, if you're a fan of the show or you've looked at anything with bracketology, things like that, you know the goal for Auburn right now is not just to win the regular season SEC championship or even the postseason SEC championship. The number one goal is now the number one overall seed, and that continues with a win tonight. We mentioned it before the game against Kentucky or even the game with Ole Miss. 3 of 4, you feel like knocks everything down. You're 2 of 2 right now. The win over Kentucky, the 31 minutes or the 29 minutes that everybody got to actually see on TV shows that this is the number one team in the country right now. I think one more win locks it up for the number one overall seed, and no better way to get it then in Aggieland, a place that you've struggled against, a coach that you've struggled with. Again, we're going to dive all into that this afternoon. And again, really excited to be able to continue our little series talking with Auburn baseball. Not going to be necessarily a full hour. That's usually our baseball power hour on Tuesdays from 2 to 3. But again, as we continue to work our way into conference play and as MLB continues to kick its way off, that'll definitely be a really exciting hour, but excited to be able to get what we can get right now and dive into the show.
Yeah, we'll definitely get the power hour back in rotation, get back with our man Lindsey Crosby, who is just overly busy right now with a lot of baseball things. And so, yes, we will talk again with Samuel Dutton coming up a little bit later for Auburn baseball, the LSU transfer who's in as a senior and, again, got the start against Ohio State on Friday. So we'll talk some basketball. We're going to go ahead and open up the phone lines if you would like to be a part of the show. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. Your thoughts on Auburn and Texas A&M tonight. It's number one versus number 22. A&M finally saw that big drop in the AP poll that we've been waiting on. Christian, they've been hanging around the top 10, top 15 for quite some time, but four-game losing streak has them plummeting in the polls. And curious on or what our listeners are thinking about this game tonight. 334-321-1390. You can also shoot us a text, as always, in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067.
A&M, we'll dive into this much more later on in the show right now, but the thing that catches my eye, still a four seed in the tournament right now, and you feel like, oh, well, that's a team that I'd still love to play since they're a four seed coming off the way that they've played. It's a team that I feel like you still don't want to play in the tournament. Still has a lot of matchup nightmares, but in the SEC, what you've seen with them over the past couple of weeks is just finding teams that give them really bad matchups, especially down low, to minimize any sort of offensive rebounding or any sort of offensive putback. You have your best perimeter defender on Wade Taylor. Guys like Mississippi State, or teams like Mississippi State, Tennessee, Vanderbilt, Florida, all of those teams very tall in the paint and create matchup nightmares on the perimeter, especially on the defensive side. And you can look at it right now. We talked about how guard-centric this team is. If Wade Taylor can give you a bunch of points, or Zurich Phelps can give you a lot of points, you feel confident. But if you have perimeter guys that can shut them down, it's what you've seen the past four games. Four losses in a row, really, really reeling are the Aggies.
Well, you said it in the open about this is a coach for Auburn in particular, and Buzz Williams, that we have struggled with mightily. I mean, there are times where we love BP, we love Bruce Pearl, but Buzz Williams has coached circles, squares, rectangles, diamonds, rhombuses around Bruce Pearl. I mean, whatever shape you want to pick, right? He has had his way with Auburn several times. Now, Auburn has gotten some wins, sure. But Buzz Williams, his teams play with a different tenacity, I feel like, when they take on Auburn. And matchups have been a big problem in the past. And I think Auburn finally has the mismatches in several different positions in this game tonight. And that's why you feel like Auburn is a much better team than Texas A&M. Definitely playing better than Texas A&M. And we're also seeing right now, with Bruce Pearl and his coaching staff, the fact that he has facilitated a little bit and allowed offensive and defensive coordinators. We've known about the scouting thing for quite some time, for years, right? But you feel like this is some of the best X's and O's we've seen from an Auburn basketball team in several years. And so I think that is what gives Auburn a pretty good chance to beat this A&M team tonight.
Yeah, I would agree with you. You go back to the very first set that Auburn ran in Lexington with the back screen, the double screen down low. All of a sudden you come and set a back off ball screen on Miles Kelly. He's wide open in the corner. In case you didn't see, if that defender came out, there's an easy bounce pass to Jani Broom, who has an easy layup. And if he gets the ball, he could skip past it to the other wing. There's so many different wrinkles in what you consider the stereotypical offense that Bruce Pearl runs, the hedge screens, the flex cuts, everything like that. Now you're being able to mix in three, four different options on the same exact play because you have guys that can knock down shots. You have guys that can facilitate. You have guys that can get downhill. And you have these guys, you hear so much about it in the NBA, you're seeing more about it in college, or hearing more about it in college basketball, about guys getting to their spots.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that this team has done so, so well, is getting guys to their spots, allowing them to be successful. Rebounding tonight is going to be absolutely crucial. And another thing, talking about Wade Taylor, you know who would be on him is Denver Jones. We'll get to that a little bit later as well, but he is questionable for tonight. Going to have to find a way to still be able to minimize him while still playing, I think, a bigger lineup than what you may feel completely comfortable doing. I wouldn't be completely surprised if it's Jani, Chaney, and Dylan that all see minutes at the same time tonight, just because of the fact of this team being such a good offensive rebounding team. You're not going to prioritize points as much tonight as it is getting one stop on the defensive end of the floor.
Especially on the road, too.
Yes.
I mean, being on the road, I think it's a big part of that. And think about how crazy this is. This is the final road game of the year. The final road game of the year for Auburn, where we are currently in the midst of the first week of March, where you have the SEC men's tournament next week, and then the NCAA tournament begins a week after that. I mean, we're right there. And a conversation that has come up around the Auburn fan base, but really around college basketball over the last 48, 72 hours, is given the result in Lexington where Auburn beat Kentucky 94-78, where they claimed the SEC title, right, at least a share. They then watched Alabama lose to win the SEC outright. Did Jahni Broome, with his quote-unquote mediocre performance, right, with 9 points, 6 rebounds, 1 assist, 3 steals, all right, in his performance, did he lose the National Player of the Year race because of a, again, to his standards, to our standards, a mediocre performance? That's not the word I like to use, but that's how people are treating it, unfortunately. And so the question that has started to float around is, did Jahni Broome lose the National Player of the Year? Because on one of the biggest stages we've seen this year, he didn't have the impact that he normally does. That's the way I would describe it. And you pair that, as we kind of look at what happened last night in college basketball, just two top 25 teams in action. It was the second-ranked team and the third-ranked team in separate games, and Duke proved yet again, yes, they're a really good team, but yet again, the ACC is bad, where they beat Wake Forest by 33 points in Cooper Flagg's supposed last game inside of Cameron Indoor, and he had a good game. He had 28, 8, and 7. I mean, it's a pretty good performance. So, my question, again, that people are asking, did Jahni Broome lose the National Player of the Year race with his performance on Saturday?
To the people that are the casual basketball fans that look at box scores and see stat lines and don't necessarily dive into the analytics, which I think if that's what you do, then I don't think there's too much of a comparison. But you sit there and watch the highlights against with Cooper Flagg against Wake Forest, I will say yes to the people on that side of things. When you're looking at it, again, 28, 8, and 7, had a couple steals, a couple blocks in there, did everything for this team. But then you go into and you look at the analytical side of things, you look at and listen to the people that are knowledgeable, that spend their life and their career around college basketball, and you see that Wake Forest is the 78th team rated in KenPom. And then you look at Auburn's schedule, they have not played a team lower than 78 in their last 16 games. I feel like that's a pretty solid argument in itself. LSU is 77th. They're one spot above Wake Forest. The next one above that in the SEC is Texas at 51.
Those 16 games being all SEC play, by
correct,
the way.
Correct. When Jahni Broome is still shooting above 50% from the floor, shoots far fewer free throws. And again, this goes back to the conversation that I think that we've had plenty of times, and I think people are starting to understand. In college basketball, there's a difference in the MVP and the player of the year. Cooper Flagg would win the MVP of college basketball this year. I don't think that's up for debate. But the National Player of the Year award does not go to the kid that his game will translate the best to the NBA, or that has the more athletic ability and that can make plays when the ball is in his hands because that's needed. Jahni Broome is the best player on the best team and the best conference.
Period.
That this college world has ever seen in its lifetime. The SEC is the best it's ever been. College basketball is the best it's ever been. You take any sort of age argument, if that's the argument that comes down to this team has experience. Oh, there's 25 teams older than this team.
And my thing on that whole thing is,
why is that punished? And when did it become a bad thing?
Exactly. That's what I was going to say, is when did that become a bad thing, especially in this era of college sports where it is so unknown and so unfamiliar and uncommon for you to have anybody go past their junior season at the same school. Now it's like, oh, you had guys come back and hang around and not go pro because they wanted to win in college. Well, ha ha, you're losers because you're old. Like, what? Like, it's so ridiculous to have that argument against somebody like Jahni Broome or this Auburn team in general. I don't get it.
It's absurd. When you're looking at the teams that these dudes are playing against, by no means is this anything going negatively towards Cooper Flagg, because I understand you're only allowed to play the teams that go up in front of you.
Sure.
By no means is that in any sort of negative light towards anything at all. But Wake Forest is the 138th offensive rating team in the country.
And it showed. They put up 60 points last night.
It's absolutely 60 insane.
Points.
They're 47th on the defensive rankings. But again, when you're comparing that to the gauntlet of the SEC, the ACC makes fun of itself from the standpoint of Duke's won six straight games now by double digits, and they're beating teams by 35 and 40 points. There's no sort of comparison with what the SEC is from top to bottom and what the ACC is from top to bottom. And again, when you have the argument of the best player on the best team in the best conference, that is what makes up the National Player of the Year. But you look at it right now, before the Kentucky game, it was very much in favor of Jahni Broome because of the way he had been playing. You're looking at it now, it's right about even, if not leaning more towards Cooper Flagg because of the game that he had, because Duke got that ESPN game where there was nothing else on. It was the one right before Kansas and Houston, to where everybody was watching it, much like Auburn got that prime spot on Saturday where everybody was watching. But how many teams would be thrilled, going back to the conversation we had yesterday, how many teams would be ecstatic to be able to say, your big man is going to give you 9 points and six rebounds, oh, and also three steals and a block?
Yeah.
90% of the teams in college basketball would give it. And then not only is it the shots that you couldn't block, but the shots that you altered. Those are numbers that don't necessarily go into any sort of statistic. And the other argument that I feel like people have is, well, if only there was a game that these two teams played where one could have decided it. Cooper Flagg did not win the game for Duke. He was a winner. He was a part of it.
Sure.
But it was Isaiah Evans, and it was a couple of those other threes down the stretch that won the game for Duke. Jahni Broome, it wasn't like he only had 9 and 6 against Cooper Flagg and got postered at the end to where, oh, there's no sort of argument whatsoever. If the score is flipped in that game, I don't think there's any sort of argument right now, but only because Duke came out with a W on their home floor is the reason that there's still a legitimate argument right now. But other than the fact that Cooper Flagg is the normal age of a freshman and Jahni Broome is the normal age of a senior.
The award will be given out during the Final Four this year, as it is every year. That we'd have the list. We just we won't know the winner until the Final Four this year.
Let Auburn and Duke meet in the Final Four. Trophy presentation goes to the winner.
Trophy for the Player of the Year goes to the winner. And what's funny is, according to today's bracketology, if they both win, Duke and Auburn, they would meet in the Final Four. It wouldn't be the Natty, it'd be the Final Four. And so, look, I'm with you. I think you make a lot of great points. And for people that watch the game and understand what Jahni Broome brings compared to what Cooper Flagg brings against the competition, I still don't think there's a doubt here on who the Player of the Year is. And at the end of the day, I think Auburn, and Jahni would tell you this, they have their aspirations set on bigger things. Doesn't mean you don't want them to win the award, though. And I think it's still important to have this conversation. Let's take our first break here in hour number one. We're going to get to the phone lines when we come back. We'll continue talking college basketball as we're just underway here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Well, let's get to the phone lines here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. 334-321-1390. Spectre, what's up, my man? Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday to you guys. You know, I'm a little biased here, so anyway.
Not orange and blue bias, right, Spectre?
That's right. You know, you look at Duke and you look at Auburn, and our schedules aren't even close. We have played more quad one teams than they have, and I think if they had been playing quad one teams, their one loss record wouldn't be as what it is now. Plus, what's my young man's name that plays for Duke?
Cooper Flagg.
Cooper Flagg wouldn't be as good as he is. But, you know, with that being said, the most valuable player on a team, I don't see how Broome couldn't get that either. Because without Broome, you know, you can say that about Cooper too, but when it comes to playing quad one teams, Broome has been there. And we can't say that about Cooper because he hadn't played quad one teams.
Right. I mean, Auburn has played double the amount of quad one games as Duke has. Auburn has 18, Duke has 9.
You know, in football, they look at strength of schedule. I don't know why they're not looking at it in this particular instance.
It's by choice, Spector. It's by choice.
Huh? Yeah, that's right. You know, anyway, you know, last year, me and you and T-Bone were talking about this basketball team, and I mentioned last year I wish Pearl had put Broome and Caldwell and Jones in the same court.
Mm-hmm.
For a while and let him play. And, you know, he even mentioned that this year that he doesn't know why he didn't do that last year, but he wished he had him. But, you know, when you put those three in there, you got a defensive unit there that's going to shut most people down.
Sure.
And so I think if we do that against Texas A&M, you know, the points are going to come. And if it don't look like we're going to get the points, then you change it around again like we did against who did we play last?
Kentucky.
We had Kentucky on Saturday.
Kentucky, yeah. How can I forget that? But anyway, that's why I just want to get that in about that.
Okay.
I think Broome should be – he should get both awards personally because of who Auburn played and how they did throughout the year.
I think it's a good argument. Specter, we appreciate the call, my man. Always good to hear from you. And his argument is very valid. My only thing, and I'm sure this is where you're probably going to go with this, Christian, is – Auburn has proven, in limited action, but has proven, they can win without Jahni Broome. Has Duke won a single game without Cooper Flagg this year? No, they have not.
I think the other argument, too, and by no means is this the way that it should be done, but it's the way that the NBA model has worked it. MVP also goes to a player that has a lot more flash than the other player does, rather than
highlights.
Just straight stat lines.
Mm-hmm.
And Cooper Flagg is that guy that's going to give you the fast break windmills or give you the blocks above the rim or going to give you the highlight threes, things like that. Not saying that Jahni can't make threes or block shots and everything, but he's much more of the physical down low, lay it in with the left hand, and all of a sudden you look at the end of the night and you're like, okay, well, I mean, yeah, he got the ball and scored. He had 27 and 13. Much more quiet numbers, the quiet impact that you feel like that's the way that it ends up going and that's the argument that I have with MVP versus Player of the Year.
Because you're spot on, but the reason that is because Cooper Flagg is Duke.
Sure, yeah.
Duke is Cooper Flagg. Auburn has Jahni Broome. But Auburn's got 7 other dudes, defensively and offensively,
yes.
Just like Spector was talking, especially with Dylan Cardwell, Denver Jones, Chaney Johnson, Chad Baker-Mazzara, those guys defensively. And then on the offensive side of the floor, you have Tahad Pettiford, you have Miles Kelly, you have Chad Baker, you have all of these guys to where Jahni Broome is just the... I'm not saying the cherry on top because he's the last little addition. He's a major part of this team. But Auburn has other pieces. That's why Cooper Flagg gets highlighted, other than, you know, ESPN having a narrative.
Jahni Broome is the scoop of vanilla ice cream. Miles Kelly is the chocolate. Chaz Baker-Mazzara is the little cherry on top.
Miles Kelly is the Reese's hard
sure.
syrup that, you know, when you pour it on, it
the
becomes
shell.
The shell.
Yeah.
That is Miles Kelly to a T.
Rather than Duke is the entire sundae.
Cooper Flagg is everything. He's the bananas. He is the syrup. He's the whipped cream. He's the spoon. He's the bowl that it comes in.
For anybody that had Sunday ice cream on the bingo card today, go ahead and check that off. Is it crazy to say that Jahni Broome is the Ashton Jeanty of college football? And just, Cooper Flagg is the Travis Hunter.
Just the underappreciated, overly talented, really good player compared to the superstar in the light. But both are deserving of awards in their own right. But
both are masters of their position. Cooper Flagg is a ginormous small forward or power forward that just creates mismatches. Jahni Broome, a little bit of a smaller center that still adds so much impact Ashton Jeanty, you saw things that you hadn't seen since Barry Sanders.
Scataboo. How about
and
that?
And got absolutely snubbed just from the Heisman conversation.
Yeah, sure.
But Travis Hunter was the one with the ESPN highlights.
It's almost like, call me crazy, it's almost like if you put them in the limelight and you hype them up and you give people a certain direction to go, it's almost like it has an
influence.
It's
like if you force feed somebody, they're going to have to eat it.
Yeah, if you lead them down a certain path, it's like they may go down that path.
It's almost like if you only let 30 minutes of a game be shown versus all 40 minutes from last night be shown that, you know, certain things happen. But you know.
Wow. Hey-o. It's almost like if we lead you into this commercial break and tell you we're coming back, I guess you have no other choice but to hang around and find out, because when we come back, we sit down with Sam Udutton of Auburn Baseball, who got the start and the win against Ohio State for Auburn Baseball this past weekend. We talk to him coming up next.
You are on the line with Jacob Goertz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We welcome you back into the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Christian Griffin and Jacob Goins with you all afternoon here on ESPN 106.7. Talking a little bit of Auburn baseball now as we begin to transition. Not quite the baseball power hour as we mentioned, but definitely a solid 30, 45 minutes that we love to schedule for Auburn baseball going on right now. They move to 11-1 after a fantastic weekend in Arlington, Texas. Again, winners in 9 straight, winning game 3 against Holy Cross, won both midweeks against Troy and North Alabama before completing the sweep over Wright State, the win against Samford in the midweek, and then the trip over to Arlington. They defeated Ohio State 13-0 in 7 innings. Oregon State, the 8th-ranked Beavers, Auburn defeats them 8-7, and then defeated Baylor on the way out 7-4. We'll talk all about what they have coming up and as we near closer towards Southeastern Conference play. But as we mentioned, we get to continue our Tuesday afternoon series with Auburn baseball. And now we get to sit down and talk with the guy who got the start against the Buckeyes in that 13-0 victory. Samuel Dutton joins us right here on ESPN 106.7.
ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader, continuing our weekly interviews with Auburn baseball between head coach Butch Thompson, assistant coaches, players as well. And we're joined by a member of the pitching staff for Auburn. He wears number 17 for the Tigers, Samuel Dutton, joining us here on ESPN 106.7. My man, how are you on this morning? We appreciate you joining us.
Yeah, man, I'm doing great. Thank you for having me and looking forward to it.
Well, there's been a lot going on for you guys. It's been a busy season so far. And, you know, we flash back all the way to the opening series against Holy Cross, where you guys open up the season. You get the series win, but took your first loss of the year. But since then, man, you guys have been on fire, have not lost since. It's been a nice run so far.
Yeah, it's been great, honestly. And, you know, I think that loss to Holy Cross there that first weekend, you know, almost gave us a little spark. And, you know, ever since then, just like you said, we've been rolling and, you know, we've been taking each game at a time and each pitch at a time. So I think that's been a big difference maker for us.
Have you seen anything in particular about this team since that loss to Holy Cross? And not that an opening weekend loss is anything crazy. I mean, heck, look around the SEC, look around college baseball. I mean, some of the biggest names have lost several games already to this point. But is there anything that you've seen early on this season already for this team improving, whether it's for you guys and the pitching staff or the hitting or anything across this team? Has anything stood out to you that's gotten better over the past couple of weeks?
Yeah, for sure. How motivated the guys are to win. And, you know, it lit a fire under us whenever we lost. And, you know, I think the main goal obviously is just to win, but I think it took it to a whole nother level when we lost that game to Holy Cross. So I think that's the biggest thing.
Well, it's always fascinating to me to get to talk to guys like you in this era of college athletics, where you're a transfer and you came in from one big time program and came to another big time program. Your career at LSU was remarkable, and it was all about pounding the zone for you. That was a big factor, I feel like, was putting the ball in the strike zone, and you seem to have carried that here to the Plains as well. What is it in terms of your mindset on what you're trying to do when you step out there each and every time?
Yeah, attack each hitter, you know, try to get the guy out in the first three pitches, and you know, really just the attack mentality is what I've always had the mindset of doing, and you know, that I'll continue to do. And I think Coach Thompson and Coach Tieford, they also engraved that in me, and you know, with their philosophies and stuff, I think it's just a perfect match, honestly.
And so that kind of leads into my next question about Auburn, right? Why Auburn? You decided to leave LSU, leave Baton Rouge, and you could have gone a lot of places, and you decided to stay or come home and play at Auburn. Guy, you're from Alabama. You get to come and play here on the Plains. So the simple question is, why Auburn?
Yeah, no, for sure. Just kind of like I said, though, just really their philosophy that they have, shove it in the strike zone. You know, I think it would really work well with me, and so far it has, and you know, I'm really grateful for them.
And so I'm curious, though, in terms of the guys that you're around day to day, right? The guys who are around you each and every day through this staff. I mean, who is it that sticks out to you, whether it's their work ethic or their personality or just the things that they do on a daily basis? Give us a little inside look on what that locker room looks like.
Yeah, no, for sure. Honestly, I think all the guys bring the juice, especially in the dugout during the game. We all have different personalities, and you know, it's fun to see it, especially in the dugout when, you know, we're winning a lot, and we can cheer and, you know, be a little crazy. But definitely one of the main guys, Saxon Roberts, he has a different personality, but you know, he knows how to fire up the dugout and get the guys going. So
well, that's what makes baseball fun, I feel like, is you get some of those, yeah. You get some of those oddballs, and I say that in a respectful way because you have to have them. Every team does, and when you do, they kind of get everybody to rally around them, I feel like, huh?
For sure, yeah.
Well, what was this past weekend like? Let's dive into this a little bit. You guys made your first trip away from Plainsman Park after what was a great start. Again, Holy Cross and Troy, North Alabama, and then taking care of Wright State the weekend before, and then Samford in the midweek. You guys make a trip to Arlington where you were taking on the likes of Ohio State, a top 10 Oregon State team, and then Baylor. And everybody was going into this, I feel like, was, okay, let's win a couple, right? Let's go 2-1. Let's see how it goes. You're playing big names, some really good teams. You guys said to heck with that and took care of business, 3-0 on the weekend, 13-0 over Ohio State, 8-7 against Oregon State, and 7-4 against Baylor, and you had a big part of the Ohio State game. So walk us through what this weekend was like for you and the guys.
Yeah, man, for sure. Our mentality going into that was our opponent is nameless and faceless. So as long as we play our brand of baseball, then, you know, we knew that everything was going to unfold like we knew it would. And that's what we did. We played free, and then we just played our brand of baseball. We didn't worry about who the opponent was, and we just went in there and did our thing, so.
And it's got to be nice for everybody pitching and defensively as well. And I'm sure the coaching staff would say the same thing. When the offense is putting up 7, 8, 13 runs, you go back to the Wright State series where they put up 11 in back-to-back games and then 9 and then 15 in the midweek. I mean, it's got to be a nice relief to know that the offense and the bats have been working early on this season.
Yeah, it is for sure. And that's another part about shoving in the strike zone too. When you have that lead, you know, you can attack more hitters and, you know, just keep attack. And, you know, ultimately when you do that, it forces them to swing the bat, make weak contact, and, you know, props to the hitters, of course, for scoring all those runs. So, you know, us pitchers can do that. And, you know, I think it makes a huge difference. So,
talking with Samuel Dutton of Auburn Baseball here on ESPN 106.7. Let's look at that Ohio State game for a little bit, because you had a fantastic performance, man. You stepped in, gave up just two hits, had nine strikeouts and six innings pitched. What was it? Was there a certain scout going in against that Ohio State team? I know you were talking about nameless, faceless opponent, but anything that you had kind of on the game plan for that squad, or just kind of had it going there in Arlington?
Yeah. Obviously, there's different scouting reports for everybody, each hitter individually, but mostly it was off speed early and then fastball late, just kind of depending on what hitter it was and things like that. Obviously, there's certain situations in the game where, you know, you have to read the hitter a little bit from that standpoint. But, yeah, I mean, that was mostly the scouting report there, and just like I said earlier, just keep attacking each hitter and, you know, good things will happen. So
Auburn baseball now 11-1 overall this season on a 10-game win streak, and they come home this coming weekend. But you guys are going to have a game in Birmingham. What was supposed to play tonight, you guys will now play tomorrow, that being Wednesday, due to some weather up there. But you get to play against UAB at Regions Field. You come home this weekend against Old Dominion, and then one more midweek game against UT Martin, that one in Madison, before, Samuel, SEC play begins. It's crazy to think that SEC play is less than two weekends away.
Yeah, no, it's definitely exciting for sure. But, you know, it's going to be the same deal for us. Just keep doing what we do and not worrying about who we play. So,
have you had a chance to take in any other SEC baseball or look at any other squads? I know, again, still have a little bit before you get there, but have you had a chance to look at any of those squads around the conference?
I haven't really. I've just seen a couple scores here and there. But other than that, I haven't really watched anything.
Okay. Well, look, I mean, I'm going to tell you something that everybody knows. The SEC is really good, obviously, and you guys are a big part of that. I mean, flirting with the top 25 again. Again, Auburn going to play UAB coming up on Wednesday in Birmingham, and then Old Dominion this weekend before UT Martin. Then you open with Vanderbilt in the SEC schedule. And before we let you go, just in terms of what this team has done so far, and really what I've been talking to some of the guys about early this season, is what did you see in the offseason? Were there anything or any signs in the offseason that you knew this team could be special? And there's a long way to go, obviously, but anything you saw during the offseason that gave you confidence that this year could be really, really good?
Oh, 100%. Just the way that the whole team showed up to the field every single day for workouts every single day. And just really the mindset and, like, determination that everybody had about practice, about working out, really just about everything that we did and just the little things. You know, we didn't take anything for granted. And, you know, I think we put a lot of work in, and, you know, now it's just the time to play free and to trust that training, so.
As we are talking with Auburn baseball in our weekly interviews here on ESPN 106.7. Sammy Dutton joining us on ESPN. You're an older guy now on this squad, and you've played a lot of college baseball. You've been around the block a few times. And so do you feel like you are able to be one of those senior leaders in this squad? While there are some of you guys, not a ton of seniors, but enough, do you feel like you are kind of in that leadership role for a team that's got a lot of young freshmen on it?
I do, yeah. And, you know, I think one of the biggest things that I can bring to the table is the experience part. You know, with especially the younger guys, pitchers especially, a couple guys stand out, like Christian Chatterton, Jackson Sanders, a few of those freshman guys that, you know, this is their first time around the block, and, you know, just helping them out from maybe a mindset standpoint. I think that's something big that I can help with, so.
Well, again, Auburn baseball in action on Wednesday against UAB. They come back home to Plainsman Park this weekend as they'll take on Old Dominion, as we are talking with Auburn senior pitcher Samuel Dutton here on ESPN 106.7. Man, we appreciate your time joining us this afternoon on ESPN, and we appreciate you. And hey, good luck the rest of this season, all right?
Yeah, man, I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
War Eagle, this is Coach Bruce Pearl, and you are on the line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader ESPN 106.7.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate Samuel Dutton from Auburn Baseball joining us today, talking about the Tigers' season as, man, they are one of the hottest teams in college baseball right now, and he was a big part of that. Again, got the start against Ohio State last Friday, where he went six innings, gave up just two hits, nine strikeouts for the senior transfer from LSU, and had a chance to talk to him right there just about leaving one big-time program to come to another. I mean, it's not often you see, you could probably speak to this, especially pitching-wise, where you have an SEC pitcher transfer to another SEC school. I mean, yeah. It's rare that they let a guy like that leave. And he was a three-year guy there, and here he is at Auburn, and is off to a really good start as Samuel Dutton, the senior.
Yeah, and especially from a team that has, you feel like, everything made on the baseball diamond. LSU, one of the powerhouses in the SEC. Auburn coming off a really tough year, but you see the trajectory of everything over the past couple seasons. You see what Butch Thompson and the staff is continuing to implement. And very similar to the Auburn football side of things, where players come in and they can see and buy into the development and see everything that's happening. Really cool to be able to have guys like Samuel Dutton be a part of everything, kind of set even more of the foundation that's already being built, but somebody that's a senior that's willing to make a really, really big impact. And as you mentioned already, a couple really nice starts, the win against Ohio State on an MLB stadium too, which is really, really cool for somebody that has the aspirations like that. It's so cool being able to dive into the mind of a player, right? Talking with coaches and assistants, you get much more of the professional side of things. By no means was Samuel Dutton not professional, but you get to dive into the pitch-by-pitch mentality that they actually get to have when they're on the mound or when they're in the batter's box, and it's so cool being able to dive in and see everything that he's going on in the mindset of just, hey, I'm going to try and get this guy out on three pitches. If not, I know where I missed. I know where I messed up. Let me go get this fourth pitch, and I'm going to go back and attack. And so being able to dive into the mind of a player that's actually on the field, and after having so much success, really cool to get guys like him on the program.
Well, Auburn baseball on a 10-game winning streak, and now they were supposed to play, you heard us talking there, they were supposed to play tonight against UAB, but because of weather up in the Birmingham area, they are now playing tomorrow at UAB. They're at Regions Field. That is set for a 5:30 start, with airtime being 5:15 over on Wings 94.3. And then this weekend, your Monarchs come to town, Christian. Old Dominion comes to town Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Those times are announced. It is 6 o'clock on Friday, 5 o'clock Saturday, and 2 o'clock on Sunday. Some rankings came out today across some major rankings, and Auburn Baseball put out a thing from USA Today, Perfect Game, and D1 Baseball, which, here we go. I mean, you can look at the 30 rankings that exist, but according to USA Today, Auburn is the 20th ranked team in the country. Perfect Game has Auburn as 20 as well, and D1 Baseball has 22. So Auburn as high as the 20th ranked team in college baseball. And if you start to look at things like power rankings, Auburn has soared up the SEC power rankings because of the successful weekend that they just had and some of the unsuccessful non-conference games that some of these other SEC teams have had. I mean, it's been a battle for a lot of these big-name programs over the last couple of weeks.
It has, and baseball and basketball have especially done it. You've even seen it a little bit with football as well, but baseball and basketball with the NIL and the transfer portal era, it's really, really evened itself out amongst all of college baseball. We've seen it even in high school and even at the lower levels. There's not bad baseball anywhere.
Sure.
It's hard to find bad basketball anywhere. But now you're seeing kids at programs like Troy or at UAB or even smaller, not necessarily the state school that you think of in those certain areas, that can still make really, really solid impacts and play really, really good baseball as a squad. You're seeing so many of them come in, like Texas State coming in the midweeks and beating SEC teams. And it's becoming more and more normal because those top programs are continuing to figure their new guys out, continuing to get new arms, new bats in the action, rather than, again, we've talked about it, those teams want to come in and make that statement in the one game against the big school. So the fact that Auburn's been able to hold those off, again, the run or the walk-off against Troy, or the win over North Alabama. Those are really big games when you look at it, just because they're ones that you think about later on in the year where you didn't slip up and fall.
Look at South Carolina and Vanderbilt. They're both 9-3 overall this season so far. Mississippi State, 7-4. How about Texas A&M? 6-4 right now in college baseball. And they've played some good teams, but, man, they have four losses already. And it just became March, whereas at the top of the standings, in terms of your overall record, and the schedules have been different, and I get that, but Alabama's 12-0, Oklahoma's 11-0, Tennessee's 11-0. I mean, yeah, Georgia 13-1. I mean, you've got some really, really good baseball being played right now. And remember, next weekend is SEC opening weekend. You've got Old Dominion in town this weekend for Auburn. You then play UT Martin next Tuesday in Madison at Toyota Field before you welcome Vanderbilt into Plainsman Park next Friday, Saturday, and Sunday afternoon. I mean, it's going to be a lot of fun. Auburn has on that schedule Vanderbilt at Kentucky. Then you go to Georgia. You come home for Alabama. That's the first weekend of April. You have LSU at home. You go to Austin for the first time. You'll take on Texas there at their place. Then you have Mississippi State at home. How big of a series is that going to be? You go to Knoxville, home for South Carolina at Ole Miss to end the season. Some really, really good home series in this SEC schedule for Auburn baseball. They're very excited for that.
Really, really good. I know we're excited to be able to get out to a bunch of those games, trying to get out to a couple of them this weekend and throughout the year as the weather continues to heat up and it's finally beginning to feel like baseball weather. Calling the game on Saturday for Lee Scott, and you can look up and you don't see the clouds,
yeah,
and it's 65 creeping into the low 70s. Absolutely perfect. The best time of the year is finally here, and really excited to be able to continue to talk Auburn baseball.
Best time of the year? You mean golf season, right?
Golf? Yes.
Yes. Golf season, baby. You got the Arnold Palmer this weekend, yeah. The Players coming up, and then dun, dun. I can't do it. I can't. I was going to try and do the Masters song, but I can't do it.
You want me to do my Sandstorm?
No. We're okay. No, people can go back and listen to that if they have to.
I'm 3-0 since it, baby.
Oh, goodness. Now, hey, we are excited for the golf season, though. Cannot wait. I was able to watch golf on Sunday. Oh, I know you weren't, but I was. I was able to watch golf on Sunday, and it was really nice. First time this year, really.
Late March, early April. Best time of the year.
Oh, it's incredible. Incredible. And then professional baseball, too. Opening day, end of March. It's right around the corner. Right around the corner. So lots more to talk about as the weeks go on, but a lot more college basketball to talk about. Big games tonight, including Auburn at Texas A&M. All that coming up in hour number two. Don't you dare turn that radio dial.
The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It's the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. And we plan on doing that some more here in hour number two. If you missed any of the first hour, you can go back and listen to the podcast if you'd like to. You can check that out on our station website at ESPNAU.com. We began talking Auburn and Texas A&M. Also had a conversation about, did Jahni Broome lose his National Player of the Year from Saturday compared to, or I guess in conjunction with, another great performance from Cooper Flagg last night. So we had an in-depth conversation there and gave you our takes on that. And so I had that in the first hour. Plus, we talked to Samuel Dutton from Auburn Baseball, the senior starting pitcher for Auburn. Got to talk with him in the first hour about his start against Ohio State and how the boys are on a 10-game win streak as they head up to Birmingham to take on UAB tomorrow. So all of that was in the first hour. If you missed any of it, again, check out the podcast wherever you get your podcast or at ESPNAU.com. Here at hour number two, taking a dive into the games coming up tonight. Some intriguing ones around the SEC and college basketball. Plus, updated bracketology was released across the board. CBS and ESPN have updated bracketologies. And then, of course, Auburn and Texas A&M. So all of that here in hour number two. Before we get into content, though, I want to remind you that hour number two, each and every day, here during On the Line on ESPN, is brought to you by our friends at the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. So we appreciate them sponsoring the second hour of our show each and every day here on ESPN. All right, Christian, let's dive into this thing a little bit because great games coming up tonight, which we'll get to in a second, but we look at bracketologies, and I say bracketologies because there's multiple ones, and the two that people look at the most are Joe Lunardi on ESPN and Jerry Palm on CBS, and I'll give Jerry credit. He updates his every day, whereas Joe Lunardi updates his Tuesday early morning and Friday early morning. And you start looking around, and Auburn's draw is not that bad in terms of what Joe Lunardi has. It's pretty similar to what Jerry Palm, not exactly, but we'll stick to Joe Lunardi since that's the more popular one, I would say. We'll stick to his. Auburn, he still has as the number one overall seed, automatic qualifier, but you were telling me during the break, you don't hate where Auburn stands if nothing were to change from this point forward.
No, if this were to be concreted in right now, from what it was a couple of weeks ago where we talked about, holy cow, this is going to be a gauntlet, which every single one will, but you felt like each round you would be playing a team that is really, really ultra talented, not necessarily as deep, but you feel like there were some clear winners to where it would line up to be a very, very scary bracket. By no means is this not, but you look at some of the names and some of the numbers, and I think you would happily take wherever you have or everything you have right now in this South region. You look at it, the two seed that Auburn would play is Iowa State. You compare that with the other two seeds of Florida, Alabama, and Michigan State. I'd take Iowa State right now. You look at the three seeds. Kentucky is the three seed in the South right now. You look at that. St. John's is a three seed. Wisconsin's a three seed. And Texas Tech is a three seed. I don't love that as much, but I don't hate it. I think Texas Tech is a matchup nightmare for a lot of teams. I think after playing Kentucky, you understand what they have. Keep St. John's away from Auburn's bracket right now just because of the way that they're playing right now. The four seeds, you have Arizona in the East. You have Texas A&M in the Midwest. You have Michigan in the West. You have Purdue right now in the South. I am fine with that. Perfectly fine with Purdue, and then Clemson's a five in the South. Maryland, Oregon, and Missouri are the other fives right there. Just one through five, I don't hate at all if this were to be concreted in.
If somebody has more time and more research ability than I do, I wonder what the record is for a one seed or, heck, just any team to make the NCAA tournament. What's the record for the amount of teams they've played in their portion of the bracket in the regular season? Does that question make sense? Because you look at Auburn. If this were to be it, if the tournament started today, according to Joe Lunardi, you would have Purdue in there, Kentucky in there, and Iowa State. That's three. Other than yourself, which you obviously can't play, right, of the 16, you would play three out of 15, which doesn't sound like a ton, but that's kind of a lot. I mean, the odds of you getting a rematch are extremely high, which is what I've told you off mic a ton this season.
We'll see one.
Is Auburn's going to get a rematch somewhere.
And it's because the fact that they've played the best teams in the entire country. Look at this. Auburn's the one seed. You have Duke, Tennessee, and Houston as the other three one seeds. You're 2-1. against the other three best teams, according to this, in college basketball. That's crazy. Oh, let's look at the two seeds. You've beaten Iowa State. You've lost to Florida. You have not played Michigan State, and you beat Alabama. You're 4-2 against the other six teams, Michigan State and yourself being the two that you can't obviously play, but you're 4-2 against the other supposedly top 1-2 seeds in the country right now, which by no means do I have to tell you shows the gauntlet of the schedule that Auburn's played. That being said, I would take some of these rematches over some of the other ones a little bit later on.
I think so, too. When you look at the conference breakdown, again, Joe Lunardi on ESPN, his bracketology from today, SEC is down to 12 teams. Right at one point, they got as high as 14. It's been flirting with 12 and 13, and that seems to be a pretty good number. Could it dip down to 11? Yes. Because here's what the bubble looks like right now. Your last four byes include Georgia. Your last four in includes Arkansas. Your first four out includes Oklahoma and Texas. And those are the four teams that you and I have been talking about for several weeks now. And it's not a done deal, but we've got two games to go. And it's looking like, Christian, it's going to play out like we said it would, where Georgia, Arkansas squeezed in, and Oklahoma, Texas may just play themselves right out.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what we've talked about. When it was first announced, or when it got a little bit later in the year, I said 12 would be the number simply because of those four teams having to play each other, and I didn't necessarily see each of those teams going 2-2 down the stretch.
Right, like a perfect circle,
sure,
kind
of. Where sure. All of a sudden, yeah, you've played four games, and you're looking at it like, oh, well, nothing happened. I think Georgia has played its way in. I think even if they went 0-2, I think they'd still be in. I don't see them going 0-2. I think they'll beat South Carolina tonight. I know we'll talk a little bit more about that. But Georgia now a last four bye spot. Arkansas a last four in. I think they're playing some of the best basketball right now. Oklahoma is the first team out. And you look at who they have left. I think they have to beat Missouri if they want a chance to get in, because then Oklahoma and Texas play each other. And I don't think that a win over one of the next four, or the first four outs, jumps you over a team like Nebraska or Boise State, unless Boise State finds a way to drop it. They're currently the last team in, and they play Air Force and Colorado State. They lost to Colorado State earlier in the year, and they beat Air Force. I feel like even if you go 1-1, unless Oklahoma is to beat Missouri, like I talked about, or Texas finds a way to beat Mississippi State tonight, and then the other one beats them, I just don't see it happening. I feel like things are getting solidified right now. I don't think Georgia and Arkansas can play their way out, because you're looking at it, Arkansas has Vanderbilt and Mississippi State. That could get a little sketchy down the stretch. That
Those
being
are at least
said,
two tournament teams.
It's two teams, and Oklahoma and Texas have to play each other. You're guaranteeing one of those teams a loss.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. I mean, look at the games tonight, man. You've got, you mentioned it, Texas and Mississippi State. You've got Arkansas and Vanderbilt. And I think Vanderbilt's fine. They're a 9 seed, according to Joe Lunardi. And they've got Arkansas and Georgia. So I think they're fine. Even if they lose, I think their 3 wins in a row against top 25 teams has put them squarely sure. into the NCAA tournament. And so you've got teams that are fighting on their way in. But the SEC as a whole has 12 into the tournament right now, and that seems to be a pretty solid spot. But what's surprising to me is look at the Big Ten. They have quietly just gained a team, and then another, and then another. This was a conference that had 7, 8, 9. They're all the way up to 11 teams now into the NCAA tournament, according to Joe Lunardi. That does include Indiana as a last four bye. That includes Ohio State and Nebraska as a last four in. So three teams on that bubble seed or on that bubble line right now for the Big Ten if those three hold on. And here's what's fascinating. Indiana and Ohio State play each other in the season finale. Ohio State goes to Indiana this Saturday for what could be, depending on how the midweek games go, Indiana at Oregon. Ohio State believe they host Nebraska tonight, or I think they host Nebraska, which there's another bubble game. You've got Ohio State has two games to put themselves into the NCAA tournament. They host Nebraska, and then they go to Indiana. So Big Ten could have all 11, but you've got to think one of those three teams falls out, right? Between Indiana, Ohio State, and Nebraska, the fact that Ohio State plays both of them?
Then it comes to the factor of which team of Texas and Oklahoma wins that matchup, and where do they match up against a team like possibly Nebraska that went 1-1 in the remainder of the regular season? Could those two teams flip? What if North Carolina does something crazy and finds a way to upset Duke because College Game Day is going to be there?
That'd be enough to put them in.
They would go from the last four out. If North Carolina beat Duke, there's no way they're out of the tournament.
I agree. Unfortunately, it shouldn't be that way, but it's how it would play out.
It definitely would. So I think the last four byes, I feel like, are still solidly enough in the tournament. Baylor, San Diego State, Georgia, and Indiana, to where worst case scenario, they jump to a last four in. But the games that you're mentioning with the last four in and the first four out, where there's those teams are playing each other, you could very easily just swap all four or swap none whatsoever and see where it all plays out.
When you look at this bracketology from Joe Lunardi, which one seed has the best path in terms of matchups, in terms of just names and things like that? I mean, at a quick glance, which matchup or which path for the one seeds, who are right now Auburn, Duke, Tennessee, and Houston, right, with the shakeups we saw this weekend, who has the best path to the Final Four and why?
I think Auburn or Houston as of right now.
I think Houston too, yeah.
I think Auburn and Houston are the two sides right now that give you your best outcome. Auburn would play Southern or Bucknell in the round of 64. Then they'd play Creighton and Utah State for the round of 32. And then I think the site plays a big advantage of that again. Auburn and Atlanta playing, if it were to match up without upsets, Clemson and Purdue in the round of the Sweet 16. I think you would take either of those. You've already played Purdue, and you know the type of offense that you played against them, and you know the type of defense that they play. Purdue kind of reeling right now. Clemson, a solid team that continues to work their way up the bracket. They could create a little bit of a mismatch for Auburn. I think Auburn has more firepower on the exterior than Clemson does, but that right there to get you to the Sweet 16 and through the Elite Eight to those final brackets, I think they have a solid shot. Houston as well, they would play Omaha, and then they'd get Ole Miss and Gonzaga. I don't think any of those teams would give Houston any sort of chance. Again, Ole Miss, I'm not too high on them. I think McNeese has a pretty solid chance to beat a 5 seed if they stay a 12 seed, just because of the way that Will Wade has been coaching this McNeese team. I think if Oregon stays that 5 seed, that's one of those 5-12 upsets you could very, very much see. Mm-hmm. I think Texas A&M would then beat Lipscomb, but I don't think the way that Houston plays would give A&M any sort of, or I think it would give them a lot of trouble, rather, just because Houston values their possessions so much. Texas A&M, such a poor shooting team, to where that would then be Houston's round of Sweet 16 matchup. You look at the other side of things, however, Tennessee is the one seed. BYU, a team that we've talked about, stay away from. They're playing really good basketball. And then you'd possibly see Missouri or Michigan after that. That's scary right there. On the other side, Duke. And the round of 32, what would Dan Hurley do to have a chance as an 8 seed to beat Houston, or to beat Duke, rather, in the round of 32?
I mean, he's the greatest coach in the sport.
They would do anything for that. Then you'd play Maryland or Arizona in the round after that. That could be really, really tough for a team that, I'll say it, has not been tested. At least not like this, the way that the March Madness bracket works its way out, where you play 2 games a weekend, you have a week off, and then you play 2 more games.
And it's supposed to get tougher as you go. Yeah, I'm with you. And what, when you're going through all of that, what stands out to me is the possible just round of 32 matchups.
Yes.
I mean, just looking at the brands and the coaches and the players that could be involved, Auburn and Creighton, Clemson and Purdue. How about this? Indiana and Kentucky could play in the round of 32. Talk about two of the biggest brands in college basketball. I think Kentucky wipes the floor with that Indiana team, but just from a brand standpoint, how cool could that be? How about Illinois and Iowa State? You talk about two defensive juggernauts. The total in that game would be 82 points. You have Tennessee, BYU, Missouri, and Michigan. That would be an incredible game. Are you kidding me?
What about like a Florida, Kansas?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, just great, great games. Louisville, Wisconsin. Like, really, really fun matchups that we could have in just the round of 32 if this were to be the bracket that started tomorrow.
Memphis and Alabama.
I don't know if Alabama wants that Memphis team. I'm going to be honest. I don't know if they want that Memphis team.
I think they have enough firepower offensively, but guys like Tyrese Hunter and Cisse down low, oh man, that would be a very, very fun matchup. And again, to talk about how difficult this year is in college basketball, we're not talking about a Sweet 16 game to get to the Elite Eight. We are talking about the very first weekend. We're talking about game two, a day after you just played your round of 64 game, where all of a sudden you're having to do every single thing you can to have to out-coach and outperform the other team. There's not going to be any, oh, this is just the better matchup, they're going to squeak by easily. No, this is the round of 32.
Good thing is, that bracket will probably change. And tonight's games are a big part of that. And we'll talk about those games coming up tonight around the SEC and college basketball before we dive deep into Auburn and Texas A&M. All that here in hour number two on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Big games coming up in college basketball tonight around the SEC and around the country. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins, talking about what's going to be happening tonight. Yes, we'll dive deep into Auburn and Texas A&M coming up in just a little bit. You've got Memphis in action tonight. A lot of people, for some reason, in terms of Rutgers and Purdue, a lot of people like the Scarlet Knights to go into Mackey Arena and pull off an upset against this Purdue team. 10.5-point underdogs as Rutgers, but I've seen a lot of people on social media who, you know, dive into that whole entertainment business part of things. They love Rutgers tonight on the road for whatever reason, a team that's uber talented but has really no business winning this game.
It's a team, or it's because of a team that you're going up against in Purdue that's lost four of its last five, losers against Michigan, Wisconsin, Michigan State, and then Indiana. They then beat UCLA, which I don't think is an overly impressive win. Feel like this team is, or feel like teams have discovered what Purdue wants to run. And if you can take the ball out of Braden Smith, don't make him a true threat on the scoring side of things. Force him to pass, which he is absolutely fantastic at doing. That being said, when you force him to 8 points and eight assists versus 15 points and eight assists, I feel like teams like that have had success against them. Rutgers, by no means as a team, has any sort of chance to go in and compete. That being said, have two guys in Ace Bailey and Dylan Harper that can come in and really create chaos. And it will be one of those things of, why not? Why not Rutgers in a game where they feel like they don't have a chance?
Yeah, Purdue team right now that is sitting on that four line. We talked about them possibly matching up with Clemson as the five seed in the NCAA tournament. Other games outside of the SEC we feel that you should keep an eye on, whether it's top 25 or not. Creighton and Seton Hall, I mean, that's a Big East game. Seton Hall is not what they've been in the past. They are pretty abysmal. Creighton, a 9.5-point favorite on the road there in New Jersey.
Watch the game, because if it's concreted, that's your round of 32 game possibly.
Yeah, exactly. If Creighton continues to do what they're supposed to do, there's no doubt about it. You've got other games, again, in outside of the SEC. You've got SMU, who is an ACC squad that is fighting to be in the top two or three of the ACC. I mean, they're playing Syracuse, but nothing overly crazy there. Mentioned earlier, Indiana on the road at Oregon. That's a big game because Indiana's on the bubble. The game happening at the exact same time. That one's on FS1. This one's going to be on Peacock, so if you don't have the subscription, maybe just keep track of this one online somewhere. Nebraska and Ohio State, a bubble game, a true bubble game. Three out of those four squads are on the bubble, all competing to stay in the tournament. Keep up with both of those games, 8 o'clock tonight. You have Arizona is in action as a top 25 team. Nothing overly crazy there. Two top 25 games tonight, though, CG, and one of them is in the SEC, of course, with Auburn and Texas A&M. The other is criminal that it's happening at the exact same time.
Yes.
Because I want to watch this game, but we'll have it on.
Oh, yeah.
You just won't have the volume on. Number 23, BYU, and number 10, Iowa State. This should be a really, really good game, but Vegas thinks Iowa State is leaps and bounds better than BYU. The Cyclones favored by 9.5 in their own building.
Over under the totals at 149.5. Again, this is a BYU team we've talked a lot about, and deservingly so, as they've worked their way into the top 25 winners in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 straight, and in 10 of their last 12. During that stretch, their losses only to Arizona and Cincinnati. They then responded with wins over Kansas. They beat Arizona in the rematch, took care of Arizona State, and then demolished West Virginia. They have Iowa State tonight, and then Utah, again, a team that I think is playing really, really good basketball right now, especially. Richie Saunders leads the team with 15.5 a game. They have plenty of guys that can rebound the basketball, two guys that average over 5 a game and do so in very minimal minutes. They play a lot of substitutions, a lot of guys get minutes in action. It's a team that down the stretch, if you're playing a team that only plays 7 or 8 guys, I think this BYU team could make a lot of noise. I'll take BYU to cover. I'll still take Iowa State to win, but I feel like 9.5 is too much for me. I'll take BYU to cover it.
I'll pair that with Rutgers and the points also. I'll take Rutgers plus the points at Purdue,
sure.
And I would take BYU plus the points against Iowa State, which is crazy. Two teams on the road, but two electric teams on the road that are playing two teams who have been up and down, who have had some injuries, who are so slow offensively at times. So I don't think that's a bad little thing to sprinkle on right there.
No. You're looking at it. Sorry to cut you off.
Good.
Iowa State 22-7. BYU 21-8. They're both 12-6 in Big 12 play
in the same conference. Yeah, I mean, I don't hate that at all. I really don't. Looking at the SEC, you've got Georgia, a team we talked about earlier as a bubble squad. They are on the road at South Carolina, who, watch out, they doubled their wins in the SEC. They're now 2-14, baby. Are you doing it? Are you taking South Carolina to get their third win
in
the SEC?
Who's that coming down the track? No, I'll take Georgia.
Georgia, an underdog on the road at South Carolina.
It's flipped. I believe this started as Georgia, a 1.5 favorite. Now it has South Carolina in Colin Murray Boyles
is going to be in action. Colin Murray Boyles is going to be playing tonight for South Carolina, who has Colin Murray Boyles, who's favored by 1.5. And Colin Murray Boyles is going to be going up against Georgia.
It's so accurate. Listen, watch the game. And
I'm telling you, they play at 5:00.
I was going to say, that's early. That's a 5:00 start.
Ooh.
They're trying to get that one out of the way.
They said, nobody's going to watch this if we don't put it early.
It could be a really good matchup, and it's a game that I think Georgia, again, has to win, but a matchup of Colin Murray Boyles versus Asa Newell,
sure,
I think could be a really solid matchup. I think Silas Demery and Blue Kane have been playing really good basketball. I think they have more firepower in the guard spot, so I'll take Georgia on the road.
Is this the first time South Carolina's been favored in SEC play this year?
Oh, it's gotta be.
Has to be. Even in their two wins, they weren't favored in those games, were they? In their wins against Texas and Arkansas, no shot. There's no shot in those wins, plus their losses. I mean,
Texas was favored by 2.5 in their win. Arkansas was favored by 1.5.
And there's no way in any of their losses.
No, it opened with Arkansas as 1.5. It closed with South Carolina at 1.5.
Did it really?
It did.
Wow. Good for the Gamecocks. Good for them. Well, I have Georgia winning tonight. I also have Kentucky waxing LSU tonight. I think Kentucky looks for a bounce back, a rebound, if you will. And I think they win. They're 12.5 point favorites at home. They need a good performance in front of that crowd. Give me Kentucky big tonight.
Yeah, I think Amari Williams plays a really, really good brand of basketball. Trey Johnson, not Texas, but can Trey Johnson. What a matchup. Trey Johnson versus Josh Hubbard.
Love it.
That's a game right there. Whichever guard puts up more points wins the game.
I'll take Texas plus 7.5.
Because why not? Josh Hubbard goes off.
Ah, love it. Love it. Arkansas Vanderbilt's a good one, too. We can pick that one on the way out, maybe. But we're going to talk Auburn and Texas A&M. Is Auburn healthy? Is Auburn ready? Is Auburn motivated? We'll talk about that as they head to Aggieland tonight. More on that when we come back.
Line with Jacob Goins on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I am Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us. Phone lines are open if you want to be a part of the show. 334-321-1390. You can also shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. And quickly, you and I, I said Texas plus 7.5 on the road at Mississippi State. You said Josh Heupel goes off. You'll take Mississippi State to win the game. Arkansas and Vanderbilt, another interesting one. Two teams that have seemingly made their way into the tournament. Vanderbilt's a 9 seed right now. I think they're good with their wins that they've had here recently. Arkansas is last 4 in, and in their final two games, they have Vanderbilt in Nashville and Mississippi State at home. Is it safe to say that if Arkansas wins one, they're in? If they go 0-2, depending on what happens with those Big Ten teams around them, they could be out?
I don't think Arkansas works their way out. I think they could work themselves into one of the last four bye
and maybe
spots.
Get out of the first four games in Dayton?
Correct. Yeah. That being said, again, with Nebraska and Ohio State still having to play each other, they said that's tonight as the last four in matchup. Oklahoma, Texas still having to play each other. North Carolina, unless they find a way to beat Duke, is going to continue to work their way out. I'd be surprised if any of the next four out can work their way in to the tournament. So right now you're looking at those three brackets, Oklahoma and Texas. One team will play itself out. I think if Oklahoma beats Missouri, which I don't think they will, they can play their way in. But right now, I think worst case scenario, Arkansas becomes the very last team in. But with how Calipari has his team playing, other than that perfect prime spot where I picked it, South Carolina to beat them on Saturday, I don't think it happens again. I still think they have a couple games of a buffer to play with.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll see. They've got Vanderbilt on the road, and then again, Mississippi State coming in Saturday. So I still think they need to win one. If you win one, you're probably in 100%. If you are 0-2, you're stressing come selection Sunday if you're the Hogs.
If you're 0-2, you then become Lane Kiffin of making the argument of why I still belong.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, John Calipari has to put out a press release and does a whole press conference and the whole nine yards. So, looking forward to that game tonight. It's at 9 o'clock. Golly, that's a late game. And that's a 9 o'clock game in Nashville. That's wild, man. That's a late game. But it will be started after Auburn and Texas A&M get started at 8 o'clock on ESPN, of course, here locally in Auburn, Opelika. You can listen to the radio broadcast. Andy Burch and Randall Dickey are on the call in College Station over on Wings 94.3. Pregame begins at 7:30 with tip-off set for 8 o'clock. Auburn favored by 4.5 on the road tonight at Texas A&M. We know Denver Jones, his status is questionable after playing very limited minutes against Kentucky, taking the shot to the ankle where we saw Tahad Pettiford step up and have a really, really good game. Yet again, he's done that so many times this year. Auburn coming off of a very emotional day. Not even a win, an emotional day, right? Because you beat Kentucky, you make history in Lexington, and then, what, an hour later, you watch Alabama, your biggest rival, fall on a buzzer beater for you to not only have a share of the SEC title, but win the SEC title outright. That was a big day on Saturday. And this is a quick turnaround for Auburn, where, call me crazy, they haven't played a ton of Tuesday games. They played a lot of Wednesday midweek games this year. And so you had all that happen on Saturday. You immediately hop on a plane less than 48 hours to go to College Station, and now you're playing a top 25 team at Texas A&M who, I mean, they would pay dumb amount of money, which they have, to get a win tonight because they're losers of four straight. They need something to remind people why they're a top four seed in the NCAA tournament. And no better spot to do it than on your home floor in the midweek against the number one team in the country.
This feels like a Sweet 16, Elite 8, not necessarily type of game, but type of turnaround where you have a very emotional win against a really good team. Then all of a sudden you have 2 days essentially to scout for them, 2.5 days because you get the later game at 8 o'clock. But you're then having to play a really solid team that could not play more differently than the team you just played. Kentucky wants to run and gun. They want to shoot it from deep, and they want to get you out in transition. A&M is one of the worst shooting teams in the SEC. They only shoot 41% as a team. Auburn shoots almost 49% as a team. Yet, for some reason, Coach Buzz Williams, almost you feel like they pride themselves. What a weird thing to say. You pride themselves in their inability to shoot because of how well they are at rebounding the basketball.
Yep.
This team gets 41 rebounds a game compared to Auburn's 38. In comparison, Auburn's a lot bigger than most teams, so that 38 number is already a pretty solid number. Now you're playing a team that gets almost three, almost four rebounds more than you do. They average a lot less assists. They don't block as many. They do get a couple. They average 0.7 more steals. But a game that's going to be very differently played than how you had to play in Rupp and then how you had to play throughout a majority of the season. I said it early in the first hour, I wouldn't be surprised if you play a much bigger lineup tonight than you expect to see. I think Turtle Hudson will have to make a really big impact tonight. Dylan is going to have to play without fouling. You're going to have to see Janai play more physical than he did against Amari Williams because they have a couple guys. Anderson's the guy that stands out for me. Does he lead the team in rebounding? Is it Anderson Garcia?
I think so, yeah.
I believe he leads the team in rebounding, and it's a guy that doesn't have much finesse into his game, just a physical guy. Janai is going to have to play very, very physical. You're going to have to prioritize getting defensive rebounds and getting stops on the defensive end of the floor than you are going to have to worry about finding the bottom of the net in your own half court. Goes to be said in any game on the road. That being said, it's added stakes because you're playing a team that prides itself and thrives in what you're trying to get stops at, and they have the crowd behind them at home.
And a game where against Kentucky, coming into it, you had dominated the rebounding battle in the last three or four games against the likes of Ole Miss and Georgia and folks like that. You got dominated by Kentucky. You got beat by, what was it, 15, 38, 23, that Kentucky beat you on the boards on Saturday, and yet Auburn still won 94-78. We said yesterday a lot of that was because these teams shot nearly 50% combined from the floor. Auburn made a lot of shots, so they didn't have to rebound a whole lot, right? But you cannot give up. Even though A&M is a bad shooting team, you give them two and three looks at it, they'll find a good shot. Whether they make it or not, I don't know. But they're going to find good shots. And most of the time, they aren't similar shots on each possession. They're going to have a missed three that leads to a kick out two from the elbow that leads to a put back dunk or a put back layup or a tip ball drill that leads to a kick into the lane and then or a drive penetration to the lane, kick out for an open three. They take several different types of shots, but this is SEC D1 college basketball, man. You give them enough looks at it, they're going to knock it down. So Auburn has to find a way. I'm not even saying win the rebounding battle. Just don't get bodied. Don't get bullied.
Don't let us come in tomorrow and say, well, the one stat line you need to look at is what we talked about all day yesterday in the rebounding numbers. Comparing it, Florida averages 42 rebounds a game. Alabama averages 43.5. So, again, A&M up there in the best rebounding teams in the country. Thankfully, going to the point towards Auburn, you look at games that Auburn has played, not as much against Kentucky because they were able to get out and run, but you look at games like Ole Miss, you look at games like Georgia, where you don't necessarily need to have 25, 30 points in transition to feel like you still have a chance. Previous Auburn teams, you're sitting there going, we got to find a way to get a stop and we got to get out and run.
Yeah, we got to beat them down the floor.
This team works so well in the half court. They're in the bottom half of the country in tempo, which is something I don't think I would have ever believed if you would have told me Bruce Pearl coaching an Auburn team not using tempo.
Well, how many times have we come in here and been like, Auburn had five fast break points. Auburn had three fast break points. Auburn had less than 10 fast break points. It would be most of their games in the SEC.
Auburn is 121st in the country in adjusted tempo per 100 possessions.
That's got to be one of the lowest of Bruce Pearl's career.
Looking in comparison, Alabama's first. Jeez. Alabama is the number one overall team in tempo. Kentucky is 35th, which again, Auburn because they played such good defense, were able to use that against both of those teams. Mm-hmm. Let me see where Texas A&M sits.
Well,
right
that's
now.
The problem is you're going. You said it really well coming into the segment. You're playing a team that could not be any more different than what you just played on Saturday.
Texas A&M is 223rd.
Oh man,
in adjusted tempo.
Be ready. Well, so let me tell you what this means. This means in a game like this, every possession, the stakes on that possession are through the roof. You have to make shots in a game like this.
That, and you have to get a defensive rebound. Because going off of what you're saying, contradicting it just a little bit, I don't even think it's necessarily finding the bottom of the bottom of the net is going to be as crucial as securing the defensive rebound on the other end of the floor.
Yeah, I'm just saying your possessions are going to be limited.
Yes.
Because these teams will use 85% of the shot clock every time. And I mean, they're going to use 25 seconds every single time.
And A&M's adjusted because they have 45, 50-second possessions because they have two or three offensive rebounds here and there that where they might go 0-for-4 on a possession. But you're going to be at the under 16 timeout when you feel like it because they've been able to grab so many boards, reset up, and they just can't find a way to make a shot. Auburn, rather than prioritizing makes, is going to have to play a bigger lineup. And you're not going to see too much. I don't think you're going to see too much tempo, at least coming in. I don't think that's going to necessarily be the strategy for Bruce Pearl and the boys tonight.
And it definitely hinders on whether Denver Jones plays, right?
Yes.
I mean, whether your starting point guard is there tonight. And, you know, he is questionable to play tonight, and we're going to see. And I subscribe to the line of thinking of if you don't necessarily need him, don't risk it, don't play him. But if he's 100%, feels ready to go, the doctors say, yeah, then fine. Let's roll and let's see how it goes. Because what we hinted at early in the show, we both feel, and I think most people feel, as you should, Auburn is the better team.
Yes.
And given the past couple of results, it's really not close. But this is not in Neville Arena. This is on the road, where Auburn has played well this year. Auburn's played better on the road most times than they have in their own gym. And we've talked about the anomaly that that is. But the thing that worries us, and I think could worry a lot of Auburn fans, is this win is needed so much more by Texas A&M than it is Auburn.
Yep.
You can make the argument, and I say this with all due respect, that for Auburn, this game doesn't matter. You could say it doesn't matter. Now, whether you believe that or not, that's up to you. But Auburn is a one seed in the NCAA tournament. That's not going away. Auburn is SEC regular season champs. That's not going away. And you could make the argument they could go 0-for-2, 0-for-3, including their first game in the SEC tournament, and still make an argument to be the number one overall seed. That is where I would trump this argument and say why this game is still important.
Sure.
Because you want to win as many and leave no doubt. Remember, that's what I said. Leave no doubt for them to give you the number one overall seed. Our concern is that Auburn could go into this game tonight with a, you know, we just got a big win. We still got Alabama. We're fine. This is not all that important. Whereas on the other sideline, it's A&M, we're desperate. We need this win because we're 0-4, threatening to go 0-5 in our final home game of the year. This is A&M feels like this is their golden opportunity tonight.
This game, or everything leading up to it, may not be for everybody, but from what I've seen, heard, feels weirdly like Florida, where it's a
weird calm.
It's just, oh yeah, Auburn does play today, but it's not. It's not like Saturday where you woke up at 8 o'clock shaking or not being able to go to bed on Friday night because you knew what Auburn was about to do. Now that everything's happened, it's human nature, right? You wake up, you feel a little bit more comfortable just because of everything that happened. Auburn not as much needs to beat Texas A&M, but Auburn needs to beat the mindset of what I'm kind of talking about. Right now, I think Auburn is a better team than Texas A&M. I don't think that's too much of an argument, considering you're almost 5-point favorites on the road. But everything that goes on with Buzz Williams and how good of a coach he is against Bruce Pearl, and then everything of the Kentucky game lingering on, knowing that Alabama is coming to town, dealing with injuries of not knowing if your quarterback, Denver Jones, is going to play, that plays so many different factors alongside the, yeah, we just won. It's okay if we slip up with this one because it doesn't necessarily matter.
And we can make up for it on Saturday.
Sure. It just has that weird vibe to it to where,
late
as crazy
game.
As it sounds, this could be a 20-point win in either direction, and I don't think I'd come in here going, I was not expecting that.
Well, I just don't think that for Auburn, the stakes aren't very high. And I hate to say that about a top 25 game in the second to last game of the year. That goes to show how dominant Auburn has been. But I think that's the way to say it is in this particular matchup, it's not the, I don't know, it's not the most heated rivalry, right? Buzz Williams and Auburn have had Auburn's, or Buzz Williams and Texas A&M have had Auburn's number in the past, yes. We've seen Texas A&M do things to Auburn in postseason play that have not been polite. They've not been fun, and it has not been enjoyable to watch. But for this game, given the fact that Auburn has a chance to make up for it Saturday and Texas A&M does not because they go to LSU this weekend, this is their last chance because we don't know what the SEC tournament holds. And we've said how we feel that it's borderline worthless in terms of your NCAA tournament bid. So A&M plays not for their season, but for their NCAA tournament seeding lives. Yes, this is what this game means to them. I would love to think that Bruce Pearl and this team have proven to us time and time again that they are mature, they are experienced, and they are bought in enough to get over all of this that we're talking about. And they very well might. But that is a concern when you go on the road in a game like this. It is. And that's just natural. Not saying it's going to happen, but I think the feeling is there for sure.
It's, again, it's human nature of everything that happened to be able to have such an emotional victory just a couple days ago. This is going to tell a lot about what this team is able to do in a tournament. Not quite because of, I understand that, you have a different mindset knowing that this is the round of 32 to get to the Sweet 16 versus just another regular season game. That being said, we hope that there's been, and I know that there has been, the talk of we weren't settling for a regular season SEC championship. We've gotten to this point, and we're going to continue to do what we need to do, continuing to play our best basketball, because right now, the next little mini checkpoint, if you will, or the next little stopping ground where you can get is the number one overall seed. And that's on your ultimate goal of a national championship.
I agree. Totally agree. Auburn and Texas A&M tonight in Aggieland. We'll give our final picks and predictions and wrap it all up here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line after this.
War Eagle, this is Auburn baseball coach Butch Thompson, and you're on the line with Jacob Goins and Auburn Opelika sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
Winding down here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Been an awesome show. We appreciate everybody being with us for all of 2 hours or one segment, 1 minute. Doesn't matter to us. We're just glad that you've been a part of it. And we've had a great show talking a lot of college basketball, some college baseball, right as Auburn back in action tomorrow. We talked with Samuel Dutton from Auburn baseball, the starting transfer pitcher from LSU, who is a really good addition for Butch Thompson and the Tigers. And so had a chance to speak with him in the first hour and talked a lot of college basketball for games that happened last night, bracketology updated today, and games coming up tonight, including Auburn and Texas A&M. And it will be an 8 o'clock tip. Pregame starts at 7:30 over on Wings 94.3. We just gave a ton of kind of breakdown with some matchups and some mentality things, right? A&M, 4-game losing streak, has a chance to beat the number one team on their home floor in their final home game of the year. Auburn is coming off an emotional weekend where they are now SEC regular season champions. Christian, who wins and why?
I think Wade Taylor has a good night. And I think partially because I would not be too surprised if Denver Jones doesn't take the floor or is very limited. If he does and he plays a normal game, I think it could be a very different outcome. That being said, I feel like there's too many things that lead towards different directions for both of these teams, right? You have everything that we talked about somewhat in a negative light for Auburn, A&M not necessarily playing for their tournament lives, but a coach that's had Bruce Pearl's number time and time again. You now get to play him at home in the late night. I wouldn't be surprised, and I'll take it. I'll say A&M wins a close one.
Yeah, I've understood all these the bad feelings, right? And I said Saturday, or I guess I said Friday, about the game Saturday, where most people were predicting Auburn to go and lose again at Kentucky because of history and because of how good Kentucky is and things like that. I said that Auburn was going to remind people why they were the number one team in the country. And I think they did that. I think they did that. And I think they have finally solidified themselves as the best team in college basketball. And given everything that's happened, whether it's the health things or you already claimed an SEC championship, if Auburn goes into this game tonight and plays good, not great, plays good, and A&M gives them a fight and it's down to the wire and it goes either way, I think I'm okay. I think I'm all right, because you still have Alabama this weekend. You still will secure a number one seed, probably the number one overall seed, and everything will be fine. What I don't want to happen is Auburn to have that, I'll say lazy mindset. It's a bad word to use, but have that sort of mindset of, as doesn't really matter. It is what it is. We're ready to go home. We got Alabama, whatever. I'll pick Auburn to win because why not? They've only lost twice. It's a pretty good bet to go with Auburn. So I'll take Auburn. I will. I don't really have a reason, but I think Auburn wins. I think Auburn will show up. I think they'll play well, and I think they'll handle it down the stretch. Give me Auburn to win on the road tonight.
Emotional hedging at its finest.
We love it. All right, we're back tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.